Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. In Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Edward Albee's Seascape, and I pronounce it that way because I've said Albee through the years even when I interviewed him, but...
No, Albee.
let's say it right. Albee.
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 Yeah.
Okay. You heard it from the authority. We're going to talk with her in just a moment. Let me talk about the play, though. It's about a middle-aged couple reflecting on their lives during a picnic when they encounter another couple who are... Wait a minute for it. Lizards, enormous talking lizards. And we're going to talk with New American Conservatory Theater Artistic Director Pam McKinnon about why she chose the play for her San Francisco directing debut. She is a Tony and Obie Award-winning director who has helmed projects on and off Broadway, including The Parisian Woman, currently starring Uma Thurman, last season's Amelia, which is, did I say that right?
Amelie.
Amelie. Okay, thank you. We got a pronunciation expert here as well as a director. Amelie, and also 2013's Reviver, a revival of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, for which she won her Tony. We're also going to discuss her vision and priorities for ACT, the American Conservatory Theater, the largest theater company in the Bay Area, and welcome Pam McKinnon.
Thank you.
Well, before we go to the play, I was thinking you are sort of our, to Albee, Cary Perloff was to Stoppard and Pinter. I mean, you had a close relationship with him. You directed his plays. You became, to some extent, known in identification with him. There are pictures of you, photographs of you holding up hands together and victory and all that. And a very important figure in your life. But why this play? Why this play? Because people immediately play with lizards in it. I mean, it gets that kind of response, doesn't it?
Well, no. I mean, Seascape is a fantastic play of his. I knew I wanted in my inaugural season to direct one of Edward's plays because of this long time artistic and relationship and friendship. And Seascape won the Pulitzer. I mean, it's part of his canon. It's not as if I, you know, swerved into the tall weeds. This is a play that people know about. But what's exciting to me is that it's rarely done because it is hard to pull off. It's hard to sort of walk that line of the surreal and the deeply real. It's a marriage play. I was interested in exploring that. That's sort of an ongoing Albee theme. And also, it's a play about transition. And as someone transitioning from a freelance directing career to heading a large theater, a large arts organization, also moving from the East Coast to the West Coast, dragging my partner of 11 years, John Procaccino, across the country, I mean, we too are in a transition. So it felt deeply, deeply personal.
This is a big transition for ACT, too, because they not only have you, they have a new executive director.
That's right. Jennifer Bielstein, yeah. my co-leader. And we're really excited to be here.
The first thing that strikes you, it certainly struck me, of course, is the setting. And let's talk about that, because you're at kind of seaside ocean and you hear the noises even and a lot of noise overhead. But you also see sand and lots of it.
Right, right. No, so it takes place on a sand dune, and that's per the instructions, you know, the opening description in Edward's play is that it's a sand dune. And what struck us as interesting is that actually the first sentence of the play is "the curtain rises." And so we decided that Edward saw this in a theater. And we went really, I'd say, realistic vis-a-vis the sand dune. But we also decided that that sentence, "the curtain rises," gave us some license to not sort of close us in to a faux natural reality. Like, nature's really hard to capture in design and capture in a theater space. And so we decided, instead of creating a blue sky surround, to actually also reveal the Geary Theater and reveal sort of the box in which this sand dune is then smashed into. So audience can see the back wall of the Geary, including graffiti from the 1920s. I think also because it was my inaugural production at ACT, I wanted to celebrate this space, this beautiful Beaux Arts theater from the turn of the century.
And he had a house that he bought from the money from Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, very much like the setting that you've given us, yeah?
Well, I mean, Well, he had a house on Montauk, so yeah. that's the eastern tip of Long Island, and that is where he wrote this play in the mid-70s, and so could hear the waves, you know, and definitely those kinds of sand dunes with the beach grass and the sand fleas and those sort of flood or breaker fences. Yeah, he was surrounded by that. He also, while he was writing this play, this is long before I knew him, I would have been a child then, but he had two cats named Leslie and Sarah, and those are the names of the two lizards that we meet in the play.
It's funny. I knew someone who had a cat named Tiny Alice. It immediately
Very
comes
nice.
To mind by association, another Albee play. It's also, because he writes so much about marriage, and I'm curious to know your thoughts about this, you know, his own parental background, I guess he was adopted, and I remember a story about his father being so uxorious, or henpecked, I guess would be the street language, to that he would make his coins jingle in his pocket before he walked into the room because his mother was such a domineering figure. And we see in a number of his plays that figure seemed to be transformed in some ways onto the stage. But this is a much, in some ways, healthier marriage. I mean, when you see Virginia Woolf, you see a marriage which has love in it, but it's a very twisted and perverse kind of love. This love is really quite tender in many ways, although these are people who are clearly at odds and have been at odds, and that comes through as well. There's a great humor in it and satire in it about marriage, as there is in all of it. Think about the American Dream. It's all about satire on marriage. But what is it that drew Albee, do you think, to marriage so much?
I think he was struck by,
because we should say he was a gay man.
A gay man, but you know, I think he would say that he was married twice. He had two long-term relationships, 25 plus year relationships in his life, and those were marriages, whether they were sanctioned by the state or not. You know, he's of a different generation.
He was of that generation I identify with, the play Zoo Story, where the police are going out looking for men having sex in lavatories and that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, certainly as a younger man, that was the case. But you know, I think Edward was fascinated that maybe as a species, certainly as a culture, tend to go through life frequently two by two, and that this convention, but maybe it's also biological, demands a constant renegotiation as you're going through time with another person. So I think that was great fodder, great food for thought for him, and certainly, like any great artist, he had a few themes that he liked to go back to over and over again, and the marriage play, he really put that front and center.
Well, we've got this couple, Nancy and Charlie, who we spent a lot of time with, but then the lizards come.
Yeah, another married couple.
Another married couple, right. So again, it doesn't matter what form it takes or what the gender is or what, for that matter, the species might be. It's still that two by two, as you say.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and you know, and very interested in the dynamics. You certainly recognize that Nancy and Charlie are a woman and a man, and Sarah and Leslie also are female male. But they are a different species. You know, we like to say in rehearsal that Nancy and Charlie are on stage alone for the first 40 minutes. And, you know, I believe that Sarah and Leslie were having a comparable conversation underwater or, you know, just the other side of the dune, negotiating what to do and what is the next step. That negotiation of do something versus, no, I'm happy doing nothing.
That's a big theme in that play. I mean, whether you should do something or do nothing. I mean, it's really from the beginning when Charlie wants to do nothing and his wife has all these great fantasies. And there's a sense of real menace, too, as the lizards come over the hill and they don't know what they're going to be about. And then they turn out to be, in many ways, of course, very human. We're talking, if you just joined us, with Pat McKinnon, the new artistic director of the American Conservatory Theater, and she's directing Skiscape, which actually runs through February 17th at ACT. Work with some really talented actors, by the way.
Absolutely. No, it's a wonderful cast.
And you've got a great repertory there, and you've got big shoes to fill, Carrie Perloff's. How do you feel about that, coming into the role you are, especially since she established real impact here in a big way for many years?
I feel great. I mean, I feel like the sky's the limit. I'm excited to, dig into this arts community. I'm excited for ACT at this juncture. It's sort of a dream come true.
You want to steer it in what kind of directions, though, that may be different or that may surprise people?
I mean, I have spent a lot of my career working on new plays. The ACT's other theater, so we have the Geary Theater, the beautiful Beaux Arts Theater at the corner of Geary and Mason, but we have the Strand Theater on Market and 7th, and that has two spaces, one of which is this 280-seat, very intimate space, as well as an even smaller, beautiful black box space. And those feel like, fantastic homes for new plays, that's only 3 years into the history of ACT to have those two spaces. So that excites me no end. I also see that as, it's a slightly different neighborhood. I see it as a gateway into ACT. I think that I forget, because I've been working on Broadway these last eight years plus, that those 1,000-seat Beaux Arts Theater like the Geary can sometimes be intimidating to audience members. And so to have as part of our architecture, part of our theater, also the Strand Theater as a gateway into an organization for newer audience feels, really, really exciting to me.
Have you any thoughts about bringing in the newer audiences or extending, ways to get maybe millennials in the theater or younger people in the theater?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it starts with programming. It starts with programming stories that overlap with, their keen interests. I do feel like it's about also just programming great artists, bringing great artists in. I mean, Seascape, I had a conversation with a student in our MFA program the day after he saw it, and he's married, but the two of them are like 25 years old, and I was curious, how did you relate to Nancy and Charlie, who are clearly a couple marching toward 70 or definitely marching through their 60s, and he said, oh my God, no, I related completely, was very excited about the dynamic. He also said something really interesting to me. He watched it after a while through a lens of, does knowledge have to destroy wonder? Which feels like, a fantastic way to watch that story. So here's a 25-year-old, certainly very close to the theater. This is an acting student. That's a millennial who's watching a story that he could really get behind. And I think doing good work, is the core of getting people in.
Seascape also takes us into what, at least from my perspective, is a central theme in so much of Albee's work, and that is the difference between the illusory world that we imagine and the real world that we live in. I mean, there's that dynamic as well, which comes across, which is a pretty universal kind of motif and certainly discernible by anybody who goes to the theater and really experiences a play like this. What do you think about, the fundraising role you're going to have? Can you say something about that?
The fundraising role?
Director of the theater, you got to go out and shake the cup.
Yeah, no, I've been here 6 months and been doing that a lot.
Like it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because it's an opportunity to speak about what I'm interested in, what I'm passionate about. I believe in theater. I'm going through now, 25 years of doing this. Those opportunities, I get set up by my development department, by my, current trustees and donors to meet people who are actually really excited about the theater. So that's an easy conversation to have.
And we're going to see some great artists, again, as you've already intimated, made explicit and clear. Going to see any local artists, any local talent in these?
Oh, my word, of course. I mean, three of my four actors last night are local. So Jim Carpenter.
I'm thinking about playwrights, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We have a commission right now out to Julia Cho, who is a Bay Area playwright. I'm not interested in ACT having a town and gown kind of experience with the Bay Area. I think that the healthiest way to create art is to be in conversation with the city. I mean, theater is live. Theater is local, kind of by definition. So bringing, I brought in designer David Zinn, who did both the sets and clothes for Seascape, and clothes also mean lizards. In concert with a local sound designer, and we get to know each other. We get to, riff on the local and the national, the local and the international. I mean, that's the best way to have a conversation.
I thought that lizard outfit was pretty cool. Any way of getting that maybe for Halloween or something like that?
I mean, ultimately, it will be part of the rental system. Absolutely.
We're talking with Bam McKinnon, and she is Artistic Director of ACT. And this will be an opportunity for you to join us, and we would like to hear from you, questions and comments you might have about theater in general, about Edward Albee, about Seascape, if you're familiar with it, if you happen to see the production, or if you have some thoughts about where you would like to see ACT go, or any questions you might have about the future of ACT under Pam's artistic direction. You can join us now at our toll-free number, and we invite you to do that. That number is 866-733-6786. It's available to you, so please join the conversation with any questions or comments you might have. Again, the number to call, 866-733-6786. Or join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org. I know we have a lot of theater fans and a lot of supporters of ACT, and you may want to weigh in here simply with your thoughts and your concerns and things that really you want to highlight about the future of the American Conservatory Theater. You can also join us, of course, by going to Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, and you can go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click up on the segment. Do you have a philosophy? Do you have come out of a Stanislavski background or anything like that?
No, I don't. I actually never studied theater. I studied economics and political science and was pursuing a PhD in political science at UC San Diego when I dropped out and started directing.
What was that you were going to do a dissertation on?
It was comparative politics. I was interested in looking at the role that illegal trade unions had coming out of transitions from authoritarian regime. In particular, I was looking at Spain coming out after the death of Franco.
That's pretty dramatic.
Yeah.
But what led you into drama?
I acted as a kid. I did a lot of theater starting, sort of age 12. I also played the viola. I was quite serious about that. And then I stepped away during college and pursued different stories. I mean, it's all storytelling. And partway through my PhD work, doing some pre-dissertation work in Madrid, I recognized that I wasn't interested enough in the questions that had to be answerable. I mean, that's what the social sciences are. You actually have to uncover cause and effect. I was still interested in larger questions and really had a telling, moment of self-recognition of, oh, now that it's no longer, now that school is no longer about fulfilling assignments, I have to be really interested in this stuff. And the last time I was really interested was acting and directing. And I knew at that point, age 23, that I wasn't cut out to be an actress. So I made a decision I was going to be a director.
And you grew up where?
I grew up in Buffalo and Toronto.
Oh, you should talk to Scott Schaefer, who also grew up in Buffalo, our political editor. Let's go to some callers, though, and let's begin with you, Paul. You're on. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. I just wanted to ask Sam if the living here in the Bay Area is making it hard to find artistic talent and whether we should be worried about maybe some of these institutions.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a bad connection, though, Paul. What about the fact that it's so expensive to live here? I mean, especially for actors who are struggling, getting maybe equity or whatever they can to live.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly feels like a pressurized city right now. I mean, I'm very proud of the fact that ACT pays artists quite well. You know, we're a large theater. We come under the designation. There's a designation around the country for regional theaters called LORT, the lead of regional theaters, and we're a LORT A. So we're at the largest designation. And so that feels good, paying artists. But
even
you're
at
right.
that pay, it's terribly expensive to live here, though.
Absolutely. But, you know, I only have control of my piece of the pie.
Well, I think he wants to know, is it maybe diminished the accessibility of actors being able to live here and being able to be hired by ACT?
I mean, I'm 5 months into the job, so I certainly have had a great experience, hiring the actors that I have met. Certainly I also come from a very expensive city, New York. Certainly recognize that, that the cost of living is definitely affects the art scene.
Let me bring another caller aboard. Here we go to you, Barbara. Join us. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Happy to hear you. I'm wondering if you're thinking of maybe bringing back the play Tiny Alice, which I saw, I think, in the 70s. Have you considered bringing Tiny Alice back to ACT? I have a family member who was with Young Conservatory, and that bonded me to your acting company.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. I mean, it's a fantastic play. I mean, you know, as I'm sure you know, there's...
It's a challenging play, too.
There's a lot of controversy about that particular production, that Bill Ball actually rewrote segments of it.
Yes.
And Edward, you know, was made furious by that. But, you know, it's definitely part of ACT's legacy and history. I'm certainly interested in continuing my work with Albee, you know, over the years, and that might very well be a play to circle back to. You know, he wrote 38 plays. At this point, I've directed only 8 of them, so there's a lot to choose from.
When you talk about him being furious, he had a reputation for being very tough when it came to, well, rehearsals and things like that. In fact, I know some directors didn't even want him, but you had this special rapport, obviously.
Yeah, we were very close. We were good friends.
And this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support this radio station, we certainly urge you to go to kqed.org. And again, I'm talking with Pat McKinnon, Artistic Director of the American Conservatory Theater, and this is KQED Radio. And let's go to another caller. Let's bring in Arlene. Arlene, you're on.
Yeah, hello.
Hi.
I saw Seascape on Tuesday night, and I loved it. The set was fabulous.
Oh,
the acting was fabulous. I'm a little flummoxed by the ending. I'm wondering if Pam can shed some light on that. What are they going to do with Tula's? Is this an immigration story or...
I don't know if we want spoilers here, spoiler alert, but you want to just talk broadly about the ending?
I guess I'm curious to hear, you know, what made you concerned about the ending?
I was just totally confused by taking their coming up. How are they teaching them how to live, or what's going to go on with taking on coaching the lizards? I wasn't sure about the ending.
Right. I mean, I think it's, well, obviously it's a story that encapsulates both evolution on a personal level as well, sort of a micro level, an evolution of a marriage, an evolution of, you know, individuals within a marriage, as well as deep in the second act, there's also discussion about evolution writ large, biological evolution. And these lizards are going through both of those, the micro and the macro. Obviously this planet, at least I don't think, has talking lizards on it in reality. But, you know, in terms of a play, in terms of an absurdist piece, I mean, I think we're allowed to let, you know, audience, we're allowed to let our minds wander and play sort of the game that my actors need to play of, you know, like what if? What if that happened? Which, you know, it excites me for the theater and in a theater. I mean, I certainly, You know, if this were a documentary, you know, I would be made more nervous by the ending. But, you know, hopefully, you know, step by step by step, at least I've certainly found it as, you know, director slash audience member, that I get taken on this journey. And, it, you know, it, like a good storybook. I think that's I sort of like that you were made disturbed by it. That, you know, like, yeah, what is act three for Dancy, Charlie, Leslie, and Sarah? That's interesting stuff to think about.
At least there's some hope, which
absolutely
is not necessarily the case in many Albee plays.
Yeah.
There's also, I'm reminded of a piece that I read many years ago in the New York Times called, it was by Albee, it was called Which Theater is the Absurd One? Because he became so identified early on with absurdist theater. But in that he said, let's stop talking about this absurd theater. What you should get out of the theater is what you want to talk about afterward, which
Absolutely.
Is really what is strongly stimulated by this play.
Absolutely.
Let's go to another caller, and we go to Berkeley. Nancy, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I'm going to see The Lizards in a couple of weeks, and I'm really looking forward to it. And I have been going to ACT since the 60s when I first came to the Bay Area, and I have seen some just absolutely fantastic productions. My two favorites were The Scottsboro Boys and Caroline and Change, and also a terrific play by Richard Sheridan, which I can't remember the name of. But I just love ACT, and I wish you the best of luck with your directorship.
And thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nancy. Yeah. And Caroline in Chains was, of course, a Tony Kushner play, and he has a special relationship with Berkeley Repertory Theater. What about this nature of special relationships? I mean, anybody besides Albee that you can talk about in that conjunction with your work and the directing you've done and who you might even bring in back to ACT or to ACT?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Edward was one playwright I worked with. I also continue to work a lot with a dear friend of mine, Bruce Norris. I know that ACT audience members know his play Clybourne Park. I did the world premiere of that, also took that to Broadway this last fall. I directed a brand new play of his called Downstate that I'm at Steppenwolf Theater. And in a few weeks, I go to London to put that into the National Theater. So that's an ongoing artistic relationship.
So maybe we can see Norton's work here?
Bruce Norris. Yeah. I mean, I'd love to bring that play, you know, in coming seasons. But I work a lot with living playwrights.
And obviously are passionate about what you do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let me get another caller on here quickly. We've got seconds left, but another Nancy. Nancy, go ahead.
Hi. I'm a retired school teacher in San Francisco trying to live here in retirement, and I just want to say thank you to ACT for your senior rush. I know it's very costly to put on plays, and I understand you need to recoup that with the ticket prices, but to enable some of us who would not be able to go otherwise with your senior rush, so $20 for a matinee, fabulous seats. I just think it's a wonderful, wonderful thing ACT does, and I wish more of the theaters did it.
And what a wonderful note to end on, because we do have to conclude here. Pat McKinnon, I wish you the best of luck, bon voyage, and have a wonderful season, but also a wonderful future ahead of you for a wonderful theater.
Thank you very much.
Pam McKinnon is Artistic Director of the American Conservatory Theater. She directed Edward Albee's Seascape, which is playing through playing through February 17th. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I thank you. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.